You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Hello, students. Hello, Marketing News Canada listeners, viewers as well. This is a special episode where it's designed both for students who are from our Jelly Academy and also for those that listen to our typical Marketing News Canada interview. So we have two incredible guests today, not just one. You get two for one today. So those that are listening, used to having one guest, we have two today, which is really, really great. When we start right away, Avery, with you, if you want to introduce yourself and what you love doing maybe in the mornings, what's kind of your morning routine these days?
Oh, okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Avery Swartz. I'm based in Toronto and I'm the founder. So I started and I own a company called Camp Tech. And Camp Tech, I say that it's tech skills for non-technical people. So we do really practical and beginner level tech and digital marketing workshops. That company is 11 years old. Before that, I ran a web studio. I'm sure we're going to get into all this history. It's going to be fun. But what do I like to do in the morning? I'm one of these people that like will stay in bed until the last possible moment, but I do have to get up at a reasonable time to get my children out the door. And then coffee. It's just coffee. Just give me coffee right in the veins. I love it.
Jonathan, over to you if you want to introduce yourself and your nighttime routine, your bedtime routine.
Okay. I'm Jonathan Becker. I'm based in Vancouver. I started an agency called Thrive Digital. We're about 130 people. We manage about $500 million a year in paid acquisition budgets for mostly American companies out of New York, San Francisco, LA, and Chicago. Can talk a little bit more about that through this meeting today. My nighttime routine revolves around my kids, basically. So I am warming up some milk, reading bedtime stories, singing songs, putting the little people down, and then passing out as quickly as possible so that I can kind of rinse and repeat the next day.
Yeah. Are you the dad who, like, when you're like, hey, man, we'll hang out after I put my kids to bed, and then you're the dad who's like, hey, sorry, man, the next morning, you're like, sorry, man, I fell asleep reading a book to my kid.
Yeah.
Are you like, yeah.
I'm 41. I do not have the energy that I used to. Kids are like the best thing ever, but also just exhausting. And so, I work, I spend time with my family. And if you want to hang out with me, I might be available after like 8 p.m. for an hour. And that's as good as it gets these days.
It's amazing. Amazing. So everyone
loves all of you.
Yes. I know it well. Avery, everyone has a great origin story. I want to hear about kind of like getting into university or college or whatever happened post high school and kind of what got you to the track you are, what got you your job in digital marketing? What was that look like?
So I have what I think might be the most convoluted path, career path to date. We'll see. It's a competition. Let me know if anybody out there has one that's a little wilder than this, but It's important to mention how old I am because I think that that sets some context to what was going on with technology at different points in my life. So I'm 43 years old, which means I was born in 1980. I'm that generation like that really walks the line of like, I think of myself as being the youngest Gen Xer, but I think some people would call me an elder millennial, which I just, to that I say rude. Like that is just rude. I personally more identify as a Gen Xer. But anyway, so, you know, I'm a kid of the 80s. And you know, when I grew up, if I said to my parents, like, hey, mom and dad, I want to be a search engine optimizer when I grow up, they'd be like, oh, honey, that's not a thing. So it's important to kind of contextualize, like I literally came up with the internet itself. I did not have, like, we had a computer in the family, like in the house, but I didn't have my own personal computer that was literally just mine until I was like 23. Like that's bananas, right? So when I went to university, which I did, I went to university here in Toronto. I went to Toronto Metropolitan University, which at the time was called Ryerson. And get this, I went to theater school. I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts in theater production. I am a raging extrovert, so you will probably think I was an actor, but I was not an actor. I actually went to theater school because I wanted to be a lighting designer. I really, like, I'm a bit of a math and physics nerd, and I'm also an art nerd. So I thought that would be a really beautiful kind of marriage of math and physics and also art to study and do lighting design. But when I came out of theater school, I actually ended up discovering that I quite liked the business of arts. So I immediately went to work in Toronto's theater scene, and I worked at basically name a theater company in Toronto, and I was on the staff of that theater company in the early 2000s. I worked in jobs such as I was a producer, I was an outreach person, I ran departments of theaters, I was asked to be the general manager of theater companies when I was like 25 years old, and I was asked to be like the GM.
Did you do Second City, Ron Tite?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I mean, I did not do improv training at Second City, but like I have, like, let me put it this way. I know my way around the backstage of Second City.
Okay. Okay.
I know where all the hidden doors are in every theater in Toronto.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, so I was about 25, 26 years old, and I started to burn out. I started to think, what is this lifestyle? You know, I lived with three roommates to literally make ends meet. I missed the parties. Mm-hmm. The parties were so good. But I was making like $5 a year. And I just thought, I don't know if this is a sustainable lifestyle. So I went back to school, and I went back to school, and I did a diploma program in graphic design. And what, this is in 2006. So this is the early, early days of web design. Like, we learned Flash in school. So I learned the principles of graphic design, early, early days of HTML and CSS, just the tiniest, tiniest little baby bit of JavaScript. And then I decided that I was going to freelance and that I was going to just be a front-end web designer, and that I would make websites for people. And that's what I did for, oh gosh, that was 2006. And I was making websites up until maybe like 2017. So like 11 or 12 years. Wow. And then I started this education company, the workshop company, Camp Tech. I started that alongside the web design studio. And then it eventually blew up and grew to be a much larger company. And I thought, you know, I can't keep up with the technical knowledge that I needed to be a front-end developer and also run my other business. So I just said, you know, I'm done. I'm not going to be a web designer anymore. I'm going to shut that shop down and then just run Camp Tech. So that's amazing. My very like that's theater awesome. To yeah. graphic design, to web design, to marketing, to education.
That's incredible. Did you ever, I was born in 1981. So back in the day, if you remember this, Jonathan, GeoCities websites or Angel Fire, did you ever build one of those?
Not only did I, but like, here's how super nerdy I was. like my parents had any idea what I was doing. I was regularly on bulletin board systems. Yeah. So I was like using the dial-in modem to the bulletin yep. board systems. And I was literally like meeting up with people on the yeah. weekends in mm-hmm. Toronto, like people that I had met on a BBS, people that I was meeting through like GeoCity sites. And my parents had no idea where I was going. I was just like, bye, I'll be home by curfew. And I'd go and like hang out with strangers in a coffee shop. And that established just this idea that like, you really can make friends through the internet. And some of my best friends came through the internet.
Yeah,
it was meeting people on a BBS was weird. And like you were a strange person if you did that. I remember that, era as well.
John, what was your first site that you built? Did you ever get into the...
I did. So I was on the web development scene a little bit later, but I feel like at our generation of like, you know, internet professionals, web professionals, building websites is kind of like a rite of passage. You are tinkering in one platform or another. I was never much of a back-end developer. I was a front-end guy and I built out of Joomla. And I would get into the code and like, you know, tweak HTML, CSS, and some JavaScript. And that's as hardcore as I got.
It's amazing. And then were you ever an ICQ or an MSN Messenger user?
Both. Yeah, both. For sure. Nice. And like, and before that, like AOL and CompuServe and, you know, before that, the BBSs and stuff like that. And I remember, you know, dialing up to a BBS, trying to download a game. And then my mom would pick up the phone and I'd be like, Mom, like, hang up the phone. You just stopped my download. And, download would take like 17 days, 3 hours, 4 minutes type thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. I remember playing King's Quest and Space Quest with these floppy disks, and you put them in, and it'd be nine of them, and you'd have to switch it out. And
10 disks to install a single game, and the box would be otherwise completely empty. And you'd buy a box; the game would come in a box.
Yeah, you'd go to the store and buy it and take it home and put it in the drive. Oh my gosh! Like I remember, this was Christmas of like I don't know, maybe 1992 when I got Myst on CD-ROM. Like, oh my gosh, I'm not much of a gamer now, but like, holy guacamole, that was my life.
That was like the only cool game on Mac.
Oh, that's amazing. And Jonathan, what was your journey to where you are now?
Because that's so I think like my interest in the web started at like Avery, you know, when I was a little kid, both software and the hardware side. So software side, I was a gamer and I learned early about myself that I liked like strategic games like Civilization and SimCity and Warcraft, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. And then I would also take apart my parents' computers much to their chagrin. So like they'd buy a new computer and then, you know, come downstairs in the basement and realize that I had like screwed the back off of it and was like unplugging, you know, transistors and stuff like that. And so, but I learned a lot about, you know, both the web that way, hardware that way, and then also myself and my own preferences. My job, you know, history and career path is just as diverse and disjointed as Avery's. I think I was a little bit all over the place, but to make it a little bit more synced. For me, it was less that I knew precisely what I wanted to do. And I kind of like undertook different roles, learning more about what I didn't want than what I wanted. And at a certain point, I remember even, you know, after a range of different college jobs and running an event production company at UVic, which is where I went to school, I walked across the stage getting my degree. And I remember distinctly thinking, what am I going to do now? And so I had an arts degree, political science, and a minor in history. And that was wonderful until it was finished. And I realized that I didn't necessarily have any technical skills. And so I went and kind of, you know, tried out a few different types of roles in different types of industries, again, learning kind of by exclusion. So learning about more what I didn't want, environments that I didn't like. And then eventually, you know, went back to my roots, so to speak, and built a site that was an affiliate marketing kind of platform for games and gaming sites and online poker and stuff like that. And so I didn't have a formal, you know, training in web development or anything. And I just read the internet and learned how to do these things. And then eventually I was kind of like, you know, that website, by the way, turned into a business and I was making decent money. But most of the money was through like online gambling revenue, like affiliate marketing stuff. I wasn't like taking bets and whatnot. I decided that I didn't want to be in that industry, but I really liked the web development piece. And so I actually went to school at the British Columbia Institute of Technology, BCIT, to study web development and graphic design. And there I learned a lot more formally about, you know, the languages that are used to produce and publish websites, everything from video editing to graphic design, really interesting, you know, group of skills. And as I learned more and more about how websites functioned, I became modestly obsessed with the fact that you could structure a site so that it surfaced in organic, you know, search results more prominently. So SEO, search engine optimization. I really, really enjoyed that. And I started building all kinds of little sites that were, you know, predicated on clusters of content, or I would do, you know, early stage link development or technical site optimizations and whatnot. And what I thought was going to be a career, you know, in web development turned into, you know, a career in search engine optimization. At BCIT, they had a class called, I think it was called Trendsetters, and the students got to ask our instructor, who is Tris Hussey. I don't know if either of you know him. Yeah. Great guy.
He used to work for me.
He used to work for you. He's yeah. a fantastic guy. And he was very kind. And I was kind of like, you know, there's this, you know, agency in Vancouver that I really like. They're, I think, the best at SEO. Could you bring in the founder of that to come and talk to us, you know, speak to the class? And in the back of my mind, I'm like, you know, I'm going to ask him a million questions and maybe, you know, I can develop a relationship and get an internship. And so Chris Freaks, who was running back then 6S yeah. Marketing,
came on
to our class. And I literally am the only one. I'm like, he's asking, you know, the class something, and I raise my hand and I answer the question. And then I ask another question and another question. And eventually I run up to him and give him this like really crappy business card that I had designed, because we were still handing out paper business cards at that point. And I was kind of like, you know, I'm Jonathan, you know, I'm a pretty technical SEO guy and I would love to intern with you. And I didn't hear from them for a few weeks. And then he emailed me and was like, yeah, we have a place for you. And they actually brought me on as their lead SEO specialist right out of the gates, because I knew a lot at that point. And so that was the beginning of my career, which eventually transitioned into performance marketing. But that's the next part of the story.
That is incredible. I didn't know that about you and Chris. That's really cool.
Yeah, Chris gave me my first gig.
Wow. What's it like when you see him now? What's, you know?
So Chris and I run competing agencies, and I see him very much as like a very friendly competitor. You know, he gave me my kind of big break in marketing. He's a super knowledgeable guy. I think what's interesting about, you know, my world is that there's, you know, we fiercely compete with other agencies for business and for people, you know, talent, whatever it is. But the folks who run those businesses have ended up becoming close friends in most cases. So we share insights, talk about, you know, what it's like to do what we do. Chris and I have a really good rapport, and I still keep in touch with a number of people at what is now called Major Tom.
It's amazing. So, okay, event company at UVic. Can we talk about that? Was that, did that kind of help you where you are now, or was that kind of like a...
Yeah. When you're younger and you're casting around trying to, you know, figure out what it is you want to do with your life, I think people experiment a lot. And what I now know about myself is that I'm an entrepreneur and I really like starting businesses and running different types of companies. And so I think when I think back to UVic and what I did there, you know, at my fingertips is a whole group of young people. Everybody wants to party. People are kind of single, you know, in first year, second year college. They're looking for things to do. They're going out all the time. Avery talked about the great parties. Like, I remember that too, you know, from those days. And so as a young entrepreneur with like no, you know, real business skills or, you know, anything like that, what do? You start to organize parties. And so what I liked about that was the marketing of them. I like doing the business side, like the organizational piece behind it. And you know, whether you made money or not doing it was kind of secondary. I think at that point, it was mostly about the experience. And so, that set me on a path where it was very much okay for me. And I validated that it's okay to take risks and try, you know, businesses and whatnot. And those parties were like the first time I had really ever experienced that. And it started like a long sequence of different things that I started.
Amazing. Amazing. So Avery, now when you look back, like education wise and kind of the journey wise, anything that you changed or anything kind of you wish you'd known that someone had told you?
No, because I think it's just like Jonathan said, like so much of your journey is learning what environments you like to work in and what you do and don't like to do and what conditions you like to be in. And really it's a, without getting too woo-woo, like it's a discovery of yourself and learning mm-hmm. how you do your best work and what are the scenarios that will allow you to do that. And so over the years, I discovered something that, like, you know, if you look back to me as a young child, you could see this, but like, I am fiercely independent. I have a healthy suspicion and disregard for authority figures. And so what that meant from a very early age, when I was like in school and the authority figures were my teachers, all the way to, you know, in situations where I had a boss, where, you know, I've been self-employed since 2006, so I haven't had a boss in a long time. Although client work is kind of like having a boss, but anyway, I knew that when I work with other people that I respect, I love to collaborate and I love to learn from them. But if I'm in a situation where, you know, someone's in a position of authority and I don't respect them, and this can literally, I'm talking like, we're going back to like my grade six teacher, all the way up to bosses that I didn't really like in my early 20s. If somebody's in a position of authority and I don't respect them, then not only can I not work with them, but I have a bit of a mischievous streak mm-hmm. and like I will go out of my way to like make their life hell.
Oh no.
you'll microwave fish in the lunchroom.
Like that's the kind of stuff I used to get in trouble for as a little kid. So I knew that I was fiercely independent. And so, you know, I think if you ask my parents, they'd be like, duh, of course Avery owns her own company. Like, and because she's good at it, but also because she's kind of unemployable.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good assessment to have of like, you get pushed to, you get marked with an E or something. It's like unemployable, but also maybe entrepreneurial. There you go.
Yes. Other term, yes. AKA very, also very known smart, as. But also like a total troublemaker.
Yeah. Perfect. That's good to know. Jonathan, for you, when you, you being the new Chris, there's a lot of profs that share these episodes. There's students that are maybe listening to this and taking notes and being like, I want to get a job with Jonathan one day and I'm going to listen to podcasts and ask a bunch of questions. What's your advice for students today? What do you encourage them to be doing, working on, and what do you look for when you kind of, I know you're not personally interviewing and hiring everyone, but what do you kind of, your team look for in new hires?
So two different questions. So like one, what do I recommend to students? And then two, you know, what does maybe Thrive look for in a hire? So number one, the biggest barrier that I've seen facing young people as they begin this career journey is a reluctance to put themselves out there. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you put yourself in front of someone and say, hey, you know, can you hire me? There's, especially the first couple times you do it, there's a high chance you're going to get rejected. And that's just part of the game. I have been rejected and turned down more than anyone in my career. And that is why I am successful, because it did not stop me. I just kept on doing it. You have to develop a sense of humor around people saying no to you. You know yourself and you know that you're good, but they don't know you and they don't owe you anything either. And so you have to keep trying and you have to be willing to contact people and say, hey, you know, I read about you, or I heard about you, or I know you occupy this role and I'd love to sit down for coffee. And it's not always just like a, hey, can you give me a job? Or this is what I want. Sometimes it's okay to just pick their brain and learn from them, add them to your network and ask them, hey, you know, I'm interested in this. I'm interested in what you do. If there isn't an opportunity where you're doing it, do you have any colleagues in the industry that you might be able to introduce me to? And so it's networking and it takes time and you have to be okay with people saying no and, you know, rejecting you. And sometimes it really doesn't feel good when that happens, but that's like part of, you know, just being a human in society and, you know, working with people. Not everybody's going to give you, you know, what you want. And so the, you know, tying this back, I see a lot of students being initially anyway, afraid of that process and afraid of the rejection that, that inherently comes with it. You have to power through that. And the more you're willing to do so, the more successful you'll be. That's not just for, you know, the job search. It's about being an entrepreneur if you're interested in that too. A lot of it is about failure. And so we can talk about that, you know, separately. What does Thrive look for in folks? We have a number of different disciplines that we hire for these days. So we're a full service, you know, media buying agency, essentially. Part of that is the planning and execution of like pay-per-click or programmatic campaigns on Facebook and Google and other channels, TikTok, you know, whatever it may be. Part of it is marketing sciences and the analysis and validation that goes into campaigns. And then part of it is our creative group, which literally builds, you know, very pretty looking motion graphics or video ads that are engaging on these platforms. And so I think what I'm happy to say is that there's no one background that we, you know, that you have to have to check all the boxes here. I think fundamentally what we learned a long time ago about building an organization is that you just need smart people in it. And once you have great people who are focused and want the same things in life, maybe that you do to a degree, you can do anything. And so, you know, we, Avery and I both talked about our technical backgrounds, not that we're like, you know, the world's craziest software engineers. It's totally not like that. But I know enough to understand my way around a website, and I was self-taught because I was interested in it. And, you know, what we found is that evidence that someone might be good at, let's say, the performance marketing side is some degree of interest and technical aptitude. So we've hired people who have literally backgrounds in nuclear physics, in mathematics, in software engineering, in data science, in finance and accounting, like all kinds of weird stuff. None of those people were performance marketers. We actually trained them in a lot of cases, or they'd have like a smidgen of experience. But we knew that they'd be good at problem solving. And so on the one hand, maybe the technical skills, I'm just talking about the media buying part of the business, not the other areas. And then the other piece is like, you know, can you have a conversation with me in a high pressure situation, like a job interview that kind of emulates what it might be like to work with some of our clients? Client Avery, you talked about this too. Clients can be pretty intense, rightfully so. They're paying you and they expect results quickly. And so, you know, is this someone that I'd be willing to go for coffee with and happy to sit down with for an hour? And if that's the case, it's a major check mark, because they'll be a good culture fit for the team. You know, and then those other things that I mentioned too, but like high level, you know, you don't have to have like one particular background to work at an organization like Thrive.
That's awesome.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot,
Our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
And for you, Avery, the stuff you're seeing with training and education and kind of the students that come through your program, where are you seeing they end up, or what are you seeing them excited about learning and that kind of whole education side of things?
I think to learn and also to, and to be the person that is in the position of teaching, which means that you yourself have to always be learning. I think to learn is to be incredibly vulnerable. It is to admit, I don't know something. And that is a really, to say I don't know, like in today's society, that is such an uncomfortable place to sit. You know, we ask that people do know something. We want hot takes. We want opinions all the time. But to say I don't know, you know, you feel stupid, you feel inferior, you feel uncomfortable. And when someone is learning, we're asking them to sit in that feeling of I don't know. And I actually think that sitting in that feeling as long as you possibly can, like your entire life, is probably a really great place to be, because it forces you to be curious and to just really get comfortable with feeling like, well, I don't know. Like one of my favorite things that happens, you know, sometimes I do teach at my company. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I've been doing it a little bit more lately. And one of my favorite things that happens is I'll be teaching a topic that is really something that changes a lot. Like for example, I was teaching a Google Analytics 4 workshop a couple weeks ago. And anybody that spent any time inside GA4, like that is a tool that is literally changing every 5 minutes. There was a section in my slides that wasn't in the tool anymore. And I had just done the slides like the day before. So I'm inside the tool. Someone has asked me a question. They're saying, how do I, you know, pull a report that looks like this? And I go, I don't know. And so then I showed them how I figured it out. And that, and the student said that that was so amazing for them to watch me, you know, someone who's supposed to be an authority figure, I'm supposed to be the teacher and the expert, be like, well, first I'm going to go to Google and this is the type of thing I'm going to type in. And then I'm going to go over and I'm going to read some industry blogs. And these are the kind of people that I trust. And then I'm going to go inside the tool and I kind of suspect it might be in this one section. So I'm going to fiddle around inside there for a little bit. And like, they watched me in real time kind of troubleshoot my way through it. And so I think taking that position and just trying to get as comfortable as you can with being uncomfortable, because it's always going to change. You're never going to know everything about it. And like Jonathan was saying, I mean, oh my gosh, Google, Meta, like they are changing every 30 minutes. Yeah. So, and I think also, you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting to any students that are listening and thinking about careers in marketing, you know, we do have to look and see, like, what is the impact of artificial intelligence going to be? I think that we can't even begin to understand the impact that this is going to have. But the one thing that I think is really, really important is tapping into that spirit of like, okay, I'm going to be brave. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to figure it out anyway. And then also the feeling of curiosity. Of like, okay, I want to learn and I want to poke around and read blogs and try things and fail and then try again and keep failing. If you kind of never lose sight of that, you're going to be okay. Did that answer the question?
Yeah,
I don't even know if that answered the question, but yeah.
So many good nuggets in there. It's amazing.
And when I hire, what I look for, the number one thing that I look for in team members and in my instructor is empathy. you got to know your technical stuff. I mean, that's table stakes. Okay. So like, mm-hmm. if you're coming into my company and you're going to be teaching, you know, Facebook ads, well, I want you to be certified. Like you better have your certifications and all your stuff. But to me, that's like, you're not even going to get an interview if you don't have that stuff. But then once I'm talking to you, one of my favorite things to ask people is like, tell me about the last time you learned something new. Hmm. And it could be you learned how to, you know, make bread, or you learned how to snowboard. Tell me what it was like for you to learn something new, and tell me what it felt like. And then can you explain it to me? And then like, because what I'm really, really looking for is, do they understand how uncomfortable it is, what it's like to be a beginner, and can they be respectful and empathetic of a beginner in that moment? That's what I'm really looking for.
It's amazing. Jonathan, you mentioned failure earlier. How has that been a part of kind of your development and what you're continuing to see as a, you know, company leader?
Yeah. Well, I think, just candidly, you know, I still fail at things all the time. As Avery kind of said there, I think like, you know, learning new things, you're not going to be successful all the time, putting yourself out there. You know, I run a fairly large, you know, agency business. I still put myself out there with people I don't know, get rejected all the time. But it's about that one time that someone's like, yes, this is interesting to me and timely at the moment, you know, that things happen and your, you know, career and the business move forward. Yeah. I think that, you know, failure itself is inextricably linked with success. So you actually cannot have one without the other. You can think of it as like, a curve, and, you know, failure is one side and success is the other side. Personally, all kinds of things, you know, in life, can experience failures, from relationships, you know, like if your relationship with your partner doesn't work, that can be quite jarring, and that's okay. It happens to people. People, you know, pair up together, and then sometimes it doesn't work out and they perceive that as a failure. Sometimes you can reach the end point in a particular role where you realize you're not interested in this career path and it's time to, you know, rethink and do something different. That can be often seen as a failure. But I think that these moments, you know, the moments where I have failed, so to speak, in life, I've learned profound things about myself. And so, like I mentioned, you know, I'm the type of person that learns by exclusion and failure, and like learning more about what I don't want than what I knew I wanted and whatnot. And so for me, when I'm in these moments, or have been historically, I think, you know, the younger I was, the more I would panic a little bit. The more experience I got, the more I was like, okay, I'm in this situation again. And what am I going to do to pick myself back up? And like, how am I going to turn this like negative into a, you know, something that is actually a positive for me? And so those moments have strengthened me a lot, I would say. And so that's kind of like, you know, on a one-to-one basis, how I think about failure. In the workplace, I think there's like two types of failure, really. There's the type where we can, you know, the employer can put someone in a situation where they're not supported properly. Oftentimes, that's through the blind spots of the employer itself. They, as a company, you don't always know what you don't know. So there are things that you know, there's things that you know that you do not know. And then there's like this world of like, I don't even know what I don't know. And those things can come out of nowhere and like bite you. And so, and sometimes, you know, it puts individuals in uncomfortable situations. And so as an employer, it's really our job to set people up for success as much as possible. But sometimes we don't know what we don't know, and things happen that are bad. And so it becomes a process of like coaching these individuals on the team around what just happened and where we're going to go, you know, from here, and letting people know that it's okay. And this is part of, you know, succeeding, is like experiencing these moments where things basically happen the opposite way from what you wanted. Then, you know, the second kind of failure, I think, is like very much on a one-to-one level, where, you know, more to do with your individual performance, I guess, in a corporate setting, and whether you feel that you gave it your all, or, you know, whether a mistake happened or whatever. So less about the organization itself, you know, failing you, if you will, and more about like, hey, you know, I prepared myself for this meeting, and it was in front of these clients, and I even flew down to their office in St. Louis or whatever it was, but I was really unhappy with the outcome, and this happened, and it caught me off guard or whatever. And so all of this is coachable. And, you know, I feel strongly that that these types of, like, you know, negative moments where people are uncomfortable are actually the most profound opportunities for growth in career. And so that's kind of how I think about it again, but we're not exactly like an organization that shies away from this topic. And I think we talk about it openly.
Yeah. And on that, I want to ask about this, and Avery, I want to get your take on this too. Students, when they go through marketing education, whatever it looks like, they have this decision at the end. And maybe if they're from Toronto, they have these MarTech options, right? You go work at LinkedIn, Google, Amazon, all these awesome options. You know, the rest of the country, right? Maybe you could still work at those places, but agency versus brand side, Jonathan, I want to get your take. I know you're gonna have some bias towards agency, being from agency, but how would you tell students the difference between working
one? I don't have any bias against agency or versus, you know, for agency, I should say. I actually worked in-house before I started an agency. So I think that these two things are not mutually exclusive. Like, and it depends like what stage you're at in your career to a certain extent and what you want. For young people who are students or not, or self-taught or whatever it is, however, which way you find your way into your first work experience, it's just about experience. Like, maybe I'm a little bit old school, but it's like not about the money. It's not about the benefits and stuff like that. Like, money's obviously important. You have to be able to, like, you know, subsist in society, but the most valuable thing at the beginning is experience. And I don't know if people really think about it like that anymore. Like, my first few roles, you know, I was willing to basically work for nothing. I think my first real, you know, paid internship, so to speak, paid me like $125 a week. And I was like really happy about that. That wasn't with Chris, by the way. This is something different. So, you know, when I think about it, it doesn't matter whether you're agency or in-house. Mm-hmm. Agency, you see a lot of stuff. So, you know, you're ultimately in a services business, you're solving people's problems for them in the context of the agency that you're at. It's very high paced. It can be very stressful.
Yeah.
You have to be good at multitasking. You have to be good at time management. There's a bunch, but you will learn a lot very fast. Yeah. In-house can have all of those features and whatnot. But what I always hear people talk about when they leave agency to go in-house, or, you know, when they actually have left in-house to come agency side, is that in-house, you can focus on a few things very deeply. You tend to be a little bit more siloed, maybe, but you can become like a real subject matter expert in a specific thing. So I'm generalizing a little bit here. I haven't worked at every single company in the world, and I'm really just speaking from my own personal experience, but that's the main difference. Neither of them is better. Neither of them is worse. Some people make their careers agency side. A lot of people start out in agency, then determine what they want to specialize in and go in-house. And then we have a lot of like really, really sophisticated people who are so good at what they do in-house that we want them, you know, on the agency side because they're amazing at what they do. So you can many different roads to the same place in people's careers.
And Avery, MarTech, I know you know people who have gone that route as well. So maybe MarTech versus maybe agency or brand side.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think there's some really, really good insights there. I think oftentimes we choose jobs because of things like, you know, the growth potential or the salary or the comps or the perks or the location of the office or that you can work from home or whatever it might be. But the reason why we stay in jobs almost has nothing to do with those things. The reason why we stay in jobs is because of the people. We like the team, or we're being managed really well, or we are given a lot of great challenges. And I think you can find those things in any situation, whether that's agency side or in-house. I did hear someone say something really interesting once when she decided to go in-house in a very strategic move after having been more kind of agency, more, you know, working with lots of different clients, decided specifically to go in-house because she had a very clear list of exactly who she wanted to work next to and exactly which skills she wanted to pick up. And it was all, you know, it wasn't a deal with the devil. It was a great opportunity for her, but she was very, very clear. She's like, I'm going to go because I know that I'm going to spend 2 years working alongside that team. And I'm going to learn these very specific skills from that team. And then maybe I'll stay if I like it. Maybe I'll leave, you know, who knows what'll happen after that. And I thought that was really very, very strategic of her to think that way.
Wow. And those folks, and I, through these interviews, we often get people who go and work for, you know, a large brand, like a, you know, whatever, like skincare, you know, what is it called? It's the big, there's a big parent company. They work for that large brand and then they end up going work at Google or work at Amazon. Yeah. What do you think about those working kind of that side of the, I don't know, that side of the marketing elephant?
I think it's great. I mean, you're picking up transferable skills. You might not always know how exactly they're going to transfer. But I think if you, there are certain things about working in teams that I think you're going to carry with you wherever you go. Now, sure. Now there's some hard skills that you're like, okay, I worked on, you know, an SEO campaign over here at, you know, Unilever, like, you know, the big, like that's a big, big umbrella organization that has a bunch of skincare brands and stuff.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, and now I'm going to go and I'm going to work inside pay-per-click on the agency side. Well, you're going to need to skill up on some very particular things. But it has never stopped surprising me where certain skills will come back around at different points in your career. Well, you'll be like, oh, dang, I never knew that it would be worthwhile to learn, you know, that stuff that I did back there. I didn't think that would apply, but actually it really does over here.
Can I just add something there? The Walter Isaacson, Steve Jobs biography, there's like this quote that always stands out to me where Steve Jobs studied calligraphy at art school, fine art school, right? I think that's what it was. And people around him were like, you're never going to use this, like how many scribes do you know type thing. It's like, you know, and to the, even probably to Steve Jobs at the time, he was like, well, I'm doing this just because it's amazing and I love it. And that's the reason why I'm doing it. And then later you have the Mac, you know, be launched and it's the first computer with fonts. And so, and this is like, as we were all talking about, we all experienced that. That was earth shattering when that happened. It was very, very cool. And suddenly Mac is incredibly innovative. And so Steve Jobs sums this up by saying, you can't connect the dots in terms of skills and learnings into the future looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. In other words, like you can only see, you know, once it's already happened, how all the skills that you accumulate, as random or as core as they may be, will benefit you in your career. But that exploration is like an okay thing. And because you do something that's like, you know, seen as weird or fringe or whatever, that might actually, it's not a negative thing. It might mean that you're an innovator in the future, but you can't see into the future yet. And so all of these things, if they interest you, if something interests you in your career, you go for it. You go down that rabbit hole. You learn, you read, you do whatever you need to do. You hustle to become the best at that one little thing, even if it's calligraphy, because you just don't know.
Yeah. I say, is it Ron Titan mentioned, I mentioned him earlier, but was a member of Second City, but he still uses his improv skills today running his agency, creative agency. I say anyone going into PR, improv skills is an amazing thing to pick up. You know, you might, you know, hopefully you don't have someone awkward, like, you know, Steve Carell's character in The Office in your improv group, but hopefully it's awesome. And it's,
but inspiring. Avery, I think you're also like a wonderful example of this. You said you studied theater, right? And now you teach in front of and all these students.
Argue until I'm blue in the face that I think theater school is the best possible education for life. I cannot tell you how often I use my theater school education. Mm-hmm. And it comes in very like strange ways, in that, you know, there's certain parts of my life that I'm like, oh yeah, I can totally help my kid with her Halloween costume because I actually took 3 years of costuming classes and I know how to sew. I also know how to like wire electrical stuff because of my like theater lighting lessons. But also I learned how to be on time. I learned how to work with difficult personalities. Yeah. I learned how to do things on a budget. I learned how to do things in a really, really creative way. When people come together and want to build something that's new and innovative, and how to, you know, gain consensus and get people to work together towards the same goal. Like, you know, theater is like, oh, I mean, I have a wonderful, wonderful relationship with my father, and he's been a real mentor in my life. But there was one point, I don't think he's going to listen to this, so he probably won't mind. But there was one point where I heard him say, you know, someone said, oh, what's Avery studying in university? And he said, oh, she's getting a degree in dress up. And I was like, oh, like, that's awful, Dad. Because I can argue that getting a degree in dress up was probably one of the most formative and character building activities and a really solid career foundation. I don't know if you know, there's this wonderful human named Nancy Lyons. Nancy runs Clockwork Agency. They're based in Minnesota. Nancy's a good friend of mine, and Nancy also went to theater school. And sometimes we get together and we're like, that's it. All tech people need to just take a few years off and go to theater school. Like, it's all we all need.
Must be great training for the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For sure. And you know, and the narratives and the storytelling, and yes, and the drama and the theatricality of it. Like, life is boring if you don't have just a little bit of sizzle to it. And that's what I love about the theater.
Amazing. Okay, we're going to do something unique we've not done before. We're going to do a two-person rapid fire. So Avery, we're going to start with you. And then Jonathan, just the first thing that comes to your mind, quick answers. You guys ready for this? Rapid
yep.
fire? Here we go.
Do it.
Here we go. What was your first ever job?
I processed film at Moto Photo.
I was a dishwasher at Earl's in Vancouver.
Come on. Night owl or early bird?
Used to be a night owl since having children. Now I'm an early bird.
Okay.
Still a night owl.
Yeah. Nice. Cat or dog person?
Oh, dogs, 100%. I have two dogs. I love them.
I'm a cat person. I feel like this is like not an okay thing to admit in society no. these days, but I love cats. I don't have any cats, but I love cats.
It's awesome. That's great. And man, cat, remember the cat? Remember Grumpy Cat? Grumpy Cat was like a huge thing. Yeah. What was the first thing you ever marketed?
First thing I ever, like professionally?
Or anything. Could have even been as a kid. Lemonade.
I am the oldest of like nine cousins. Mm-hmm. And so my first marketing was when I was the director of little shows that I forced them yes. to do yeah. for my aunts and uncles. And I would run and tell all the aunts and uncles were putting on a show yeah. Later on today. And then I would bark at my cousins yeah. as I directed them in their performance.
Perfect. I love that. I was 17 and I was selling tickets to my high school prom.
That is amazing. Which high school? Which one was it?
Pardon me?
Which high school did you go to?
Point Grey in Carisdale, Vancouver.
Yep. Very cool. Avery, back to you. Dark or milk chocolate?
Milk.
Milk.
Nice. Favorite word right now?
Mischief.
Nice.
Cacophony.
Okay. I'm going to have to look that up after this. That's great. I like it. It's great. What's the last charity you supported financially or with your time and why?
That would have been the Canadian Diabetes Association, yeah. Which is now just called Diabetes Canada, because my father is a type 1 diabetic and was doing a big fundraiser.
Nice.
I'm pretty involved with BC Children's Hospital. And so, yeah, just in a succinct answer, BC Children's Hospital.
Amazing. What's a movie you could watch like over and over again? Just love it.
Jaws.
Yeah. Nice.
The Thomas Crown Affair.
Okay. Very cool.
The Pierce Brosnan version.
Okay. There we go. Nice. Favorite song or album on repeat right now?
What have I been listening to? This is going to sound like really sappy, but like, I really like the new Boy Genius album. It's very sad.
It's awesome.
On Spotify. So I'm, you know, I have a 9-month-old and a 3-year-old, and my 9-month-old, whenever she gets upset, if I put the Beatles on, she's like, and So I've just been playing the Beatles greatest hits a lot, which means that she gets upset a lot at the moment, but it really works.
This is a fun one. In another multiverse, if you weren't doing this job, what would you be doing with your life?
I'm going to kick back to that original theater path. I think there's there's an Avery and a parallel universe. It's a lighting designer.
Okay, perfect.
I probably would have been like a mechanical engineer.
Yeah.
I come from a long line of mechanical engineers and I'm not one. So I probably could have like gone in that direction.
Amazing. App on your phone you can't live without.
Slack.
Right. Audible.
Okay, nice. Favorite children's book?
I really like this children's book called The Princess and the Pony by Canadian author Kate Beaton. It's delightful. Pick it up for your kids or even just read it amongst adults. It's great.
Perfect.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Ooh. I don't know if you've read that book, but it's a charmer. My three-year-old loves it.
Yeah, no, it's a great one. Great illustrations too.
Yeah.
Best thing you ever bought for under $10?
I'm like literally like looking around my office, like what did I buy for under $10? Oh, that's tough. Under $10.
You can pass this one. You can say skip.
I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, that's right.
One of our neighbors was having a yard sale and they had like a garbage bag full of toy trucks and toy cars. Yeah. And so I think it was $10. So maybe I'm disqualified, but
no, yard
my
sales.
Son has had like limitless joy from this garbage bag of like, you know, hand-me-down toys and trucks. And like to this day walks around with them, wants to take them to daycare, all of it.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Best purchase I've ever made.
Great. Over to you, Avery. What's the most important thing you've ever changed your mind about?
I almost shut down my company about 3 years ago.
Okay. And you did not.
And I did not.
Good for you. That's great. Yeah. Thank you for not doing that. Appreciate it. Jonathan.
I'll tie it into some of the themes we were talking before, but there were moments where I really wanted to give up early on, especially where you are still casting around and you don't know everything about yourself yet. And you're not sure what's around the next corner. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to keep going. And I think it was the best, you know, choice I've ever made. And I'm speaking specifically in the context of starting an agency business.
Amazing. That's great. Back to you, Avery. Business or marketing book you'd recommend?
One that a lot of people are not going to call this a business or marketing book, whatever. I really enjoyed The Art of Gathering by Priya Parker. Nice. It's about how to just be more thoughtful about bringing people together, whether it's a dinner party or a conference or a tech workshop. It's a delight.
Cool.
Awesome. Storyworthy by Matthew Dix. He is kind of like an award-winning, you know, professional storyteller. He's won all kinds of awards. And he really breaks down, you know, how to tell stories. In a live, you know, format type thing. And I think there's a lot of takeaways there for how to write marketing copy or how to organize a presentation or do a pitch. All of these things are like, you know, it's a massive skill set. Even if you take away one or two small things from that book, it's really, really crucial for marketers.
It's amazing. Podcasts, website, newsletter that you go for inspiration, ideas? What do you want to shout out?
One that I really, really love is, this is related to careers and business, not so much marketing per se. Really great newsletter that comes from a team that I know here in Toronto. They're called Raw Signal Group. And they put out a killer newsletter every 2 weeks. They're management trainers, like they do management training, but they write so eloquently about what it is to be in a job these days. I highly recommend subscribing.
That's a great recommendation, especially for the audience we have listening. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Jonathan.
Podcast, I like Lenny Riczynski. So he mostly a US audience there, but he talks a lot about marketing and product. and interviews, seems to have access to like the CTO of Stripe and the person who started this company, the person who started that company. And so there's lots of interesting stuff on there. And I like it because I find that sometimes I end up in a bit of a silo if I'm reading too much about the same thing. And so he has a really nice way of weaving in things that are themed well, but, you know, across different sides of the industry. Yeah.
It's amazing.
And then, oh yeah. And actually, I'm forgetting the guy's name, the Wait But Why newsletter. Okay. Forgetting his name, but this guy writes about like the world's curiosities, and it could be anything from, you know, the AI revolution to, you know, something about science that he thinks is really interesting.
It's awesome. Avery, where can people find you online outside of your GeoCities website?
Oh yeah, which, you know, of course is still rocking.
Yeah.
I am Avery Swartz. There's no C or H in my last name. It's Avery Swartz, not Schwartz, although you know I own all the domain names of all the misspellings. These days, you know what? Oh friends, this is like a topic for another day, but I actually quit Twitter. And I still miss it because I loved it so much. Yeah. I spent so much time on Twitter, but I'm out. Yeah. So these days I'm more on Instagram and LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And I'm still looking for my new Twitter replacement. But I'm at Avery Swartz everywhere. I've got that name like locked up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not cool enough for TikTok. I'm old.
I like TikTok, but I'm a consumer, not a producer of content.
Yeah,
I'm
same.
Cool enough to produce content on TikTok.
That's amazing. Avery, what tell us about your book. Where can we find your book as well?
Oh, yeah, I wrote a book and it's pretty good. Even I think so. And actually, there's an interesting story about how there was a long time where I did not think that it was a good book. And I thought I didn't know anything and I had imposter syndrome and like, oh gosh, that was a real pain in the butt. But got rid of that and wrote a great book. It's called See You on the Internet: Building Your Small Business with Digital Marketing. It's an international bestseller. It's been translated into other languages. It's available wherever books are sold. Many libraries carry it in paper book and ebook version. Mm-hmm. And it is on Audible with, if you can't get enough of this voice, just imagine 5 hours of me reading it to you, saying such words as search engine optimization and marketing funnels and conversion metrics. Ooh. Like, I mean, like you can play it to your baby when you need your baby to get to sleep. It's great.
Oh, that is amazing. That is amazing. And Jonathan, what about you? Where do you hang out on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at JZBecker. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn as well, and thrivedigital.com as well. You can reach out through our contact form and talk to us more about getting hired, jobs, or working with us.
It's amazing. Thank you both for coming here today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, it's really great. Thank you, students, for joining us in the special student episode. For all of our Jelly Academy students and for Marketing News Canada listeners, what a treat to have two guests on the show. And we'll see you next time on the next episode of Marketing News Canada.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded at the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editor, Travis Jeffers.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.